It's the Healthy Woman Show on WJR with Marie Osborne and Dr. Jonathan Zaidan, presented by Women's Excellence. Now here's your host, Marie Osborne.
Dr. Zaidan and everyone, welcome back to Women's Excellence, a Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. Dr. Zaidan, our world has completely changed from the last time we talked.
Marie, there is no doubt. I mean, this whole COVID pandemic has really changed healthcare. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, everything is turned upside down. I did an interview on the radio the other day talking about virtual health. And, you know, thank God we actually put that in place, because I don't think if we would not have done that, I don't think we would have been able to get through this crisis for our patients. And so, you know, it's really made our virtual care platform that we've talked about on this show paramount to making patients get the care they need at the time they need it. We've had emergencies that have come through now through our virtual care pad play. Everything's changed. Everything that we do in our office has been turned upside down in a month. I can't believe it.
And when this story first began to unfold, I did think about you, because I know you've been a big proponent of specialty virtual care. We're not only going to talk about that, but we're going to talk about how COVID-19 has impacted your patients and how you're dealing with that. We're also going to be talking about infertility here on the Healthy Woman Show on WJR. We're back on the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR, brought to you by Women's Excellence. Dr. Zaidan, as always, alongside, and never have we needed his sound, his advice, and his calming presence more than we do right at this minute. Dr. Zaidan, I can't imagine what it's like for a lot of your patients right now, especially women who are about to give birth with this COVID-19 pandemic unfolding before our eyes, stressing the health system. Where do we start? Where would you like to start?
You know, I think if you actually think about, you know, what we're doing right now, people need to stay calm. I mean, the United States healthcare system is the best in the world. But what we're experiencing right now is the government saying the leaders of our healthcare system need some time. They need time to learn about this virus and learn about the natural properties and how it's actually affecting patients. We can't rely on all the information that we're getting from other countries, because there are differences in our demographics, right? So if the patients themselves are a little bit different, they eat different, their diets are different, they may respond to this virus differently. So we're giving ourselves some time right now. This little break, this little hiatus in everybody's world is giving the healthcare system some time to understand the virus better. It's giving our manufacturing sector, which, again, is one of the best in the world, some time to manufacture and deliver supplies to the hospital that need it. These PPE supplies that everybody talks about, these things have to be made and distributed. So if we can calm this virus down for a little bit, that's going to ultimately help us. And then also, the hospitals need to be prepared for a larger influx of patients. So instead of just kind of overwhelming the system, let them prepare for what they're going to do if they get more patients, and hopefully decrease that amount of influx of patients by decreasing this overall pandemic, by keeping us at home. So everything that we're doing is the right thing to do. The thing is that people need to understand that we don't have to have fear. What we just need to do is kind of comply with what people are saying and allow our system, again, the best in the world, to kind of catch up. You know, and in the meantime, these are my suggestions. Keep up your normal routine as much as possible. Use some time to catch up on things and keep your mind occupied. Set a few goals around your house, you know, things to get things done, right? I mean, you know, all those honey-dos that you wanted to do, you know, either your husband or yourself have given it to one another. I mean, get some of those things done. And then finally, I think the best thing I can tell you as a doctor, eat good and get adequate sleep, because both of those have been shown to be great immune busters. So they help your immune system get boosted up a little bit to bust over these viruses and things and get you back to normal health if you do get this virus.
If we can just talk about fear and anxiety for just a moment and how it plays on healthcare, the general health of people, because your specialty is obstetrics, and there's a lot of fear and anxiety wrapped up in obstetrics. And I mean, there's a lot of excitement too, of course, about a baby coming, but there's also that fear and anxiety. So I know part of your job and one of your skill sets is trying to allay the fears and the anxiety of your patients, holding their hands and saying, you know what, we got this. This is going to be okay. So you just outlined what people can do to help themselves, one of them, of course, being the routine. But how do doctors prepare to help their patients for the onslaught of anxiety that they're going to be seeing in their patients?
I think the biggest thing is to explain to them that life is going to go on after this virus, and that we're actually treating this as a pandemic in order to stop a massive onslaught of disease throughout the entire world. We're not doing this on a one-to-one basis. So you have to think a little bit more from a global perspective. You know, Dr. Fauci, you know, when you hear him with President Trump talking on TV, right? These guys are looking at this from a global perspective. You are an individual perspective. So the only thing that you can do to change this is to help the overall global spread by doing your part, by keeping yourself isolated slightly. And then the other issue is that you have to make sure that you're keeping yourself healthy. And my job as a physician is to tell people to do that. I don't have a vaccine, nor do we have an adequate treatment, at least at this time that we know of, for the virus. The biggest thing is keeping yourself healthy. That's your number one chance to fight it off. And the truth of the matter is, use some common sense. 85% of the people that have gotten this virus have had mild or no symptoms. We've seen that over and over again in the news. People have questioned it, but it's been very, very clearly documented. So the question is really, there's 15% of the population that are at highest risk. And if you're pregnant, you have to assume that you're at higher risk, but that doesn't mean that you're definitely going to get the virus and that you're definitely going to have bad ramifications. And that's my job as a physician, is to use common sense. Because if somebody's having too much fear and too much anxiety, that's not good for your pregnancy either. So we want to make sure that you stay healthy both mentally and physically. I think the most important thing that people need to know is common sense. I mean, you know, if you have a cough, stay away from people. If you are touching, you know, multiple things where other people have been, then wash your hands. But, you know, the biggest thing that you need to do in this environment is to keep yourself healthy and use some common sense. And, you know, I'm glad that we're talking about, in our next segment, about infertility, because we need to hear about something positive out of all this. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, we bring babies into the world all the time, and we have so much, you know, technology now to help people get pregnant. So as much as we've heard of all the negative about this virus, it's about time that we talk about something positive. So I'm going to kind of shift this show, if it's okay with you, Marie. I'd like to shift this show over towards more of a positive tone. We've got a guest that's going to talk about bringing babies into the world, and I think that's very important.
And that's exactly where we're headed here on the Healthy Woman Show, brought to you by Women's Excellence. We're going to talk about infertility because life does go on. As you heard Dr. Zaden say, you are listening to the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. Back to the Healthy Woman Show, a service of Women's Excellence here on WJR. We're talking a little bit about infertility in the midst, of course, of the pandemic. We're not ignoring the big story of the day, but as Dr. Zaden said, we'd like to talk a little bit about bringing new life into the world and maybe something positive. And Dr. Zaden, there are so many questions about this complex issue of female infertility. Can you give us a little bit of info about what are the problems that women face when they have infertility?
You know, again, you know, with everything going on, this may seem trivial to some, but the truth of the matter is that once life goes on, we're going to have to talk about these issues. And, you know, people always ask me, they're like, well, how come I can't have a baby? And the truth of the matter is it's probably for a few reasons, including, if they're not ovulating correctly or they're not having menstrual cycles correctly because they're not producing an egg correctly, if they have any damage to their fallopian tubes or uterus from previous surgical intervention or from an infection. And uterine anomalies, people that have are just born congenitally with something that's abnormal. And then there's a whole gamut of immunogenic reasons. People that, you know, have like almost like an allergic reaction to either sperm or they have some sort of immunocompromise that causes their own body to attack the egg. And then a whole course and a whole gamut of unexplained infertility. Unexplained infertility is just, this is that those people that just can't get pregnant, we just don't know why.
So Dr. Zaden, what is the definition of infertility? I mean, I hear so many women talk about that, and I think it means a lot of different things. What's the textbook definition, if you will?
Well, the textbook definition is a couple that's not being able to become pregnant after a year or 12 months worth of trying. So if you've been trying to get pregnant for a year and you're having regular unprotected intercourse and you're not using any hormonal items or anything that would potentially cause you not to get pregnant, then that's really the definition of infertility. However, you know, it varies a little bit based on age in that, you know, if you're older, then, you know, we limit that down to about 6 months. So, you know, so if you're above age 35, we say 6 months of trying, then, you know, we make the definition of infertility. And the reason for that is because we want to get people in earlier. And so, you know, if we can get them, you know, to be seen earlier to, you know, fix a problem, per se, that is ultimately going to allow them to have the full gamut of their family. Because remember, most people do want more than one child.
And so what are some of the causes that would present a patient in your office for this issue?
Well, I mean, the big ones, right, if it's not male factor infertility, and that's pretty easily found by just doing a semen analysis. So if you send your partner for a semen analysis and it's normal, well, then it's most likely not male factor. And, you know, and then a simple workup to look at, you know, whether or not somebody has uterine anomalies is relatively easy to do. So those are the simple ones. And then if they're having any problems with, like, for example, ovulation, meaning that they're not getting regular periods, the first step would be to get hormone labs and look at them from a perspective of, are they gaining weight? Are they under a lot of stress? And do their hormones exhibit, you know, metabolic deficiencies that might not allow them to have normal periods? And then, obviously, if you have any kind of damage to the fallopian tubes, you're looking for a history of things like pelvic inflammatory disease, a history of endometriosis, a history of uterine fibroids, previous surgery or scar tissue, a ruptured appendix, for example, or even ovarian cysts that may have ruptured that required surgery or even that did not require surgery. So those are the first, you know, things that we're looking for as causative factors.
And when a patient comes to your office and they say to you, doctor, you know, they're 35, let's say, or 37, and they've been trying for a year and nothing has happened, what can they look at or anticipate in terms of a workup at your office?
Well, I think I alluded to that a little bit earlier in that the first thing I typically do for those patients is I get a semen analysis. So I have the significant other, husband, get a semen analysis right away. Then I get some, you know, a urine test, some blood work, and some microbiologic testing, cultures, things like that to check for an infection or any kind of hormonal or thyroid problem. And then I really try to understand what their menstrual cycle is. So are they having short menstrual cycles? Are they having heavy menstrual cycles? Are they skipping cycles? Once I've kind of gathered all that information, and that can be done really within 1 to 2 office visits. You know, once we have that information in these 2 first visits, which could be no more than a week apart. So in 1 week, we could probably have most of that data. Then we start to evaluate to make sure that, you know, somebody's not having any kind of recurrent early miscarriages. So, you know, we'll see patients that say, well, I got a positive pregnancy test 3 times, but then they were negative 10 days later. So we look for those reasons and, you know, evaluate them with ultrasound. And then, you know, potentially even look further if we don't find any abnormalities there with things like hysteroscopy, where we take a tiny little telescope and look inside the uterus. And then many times we'll go towards laparoscopy, where we actually take a little telescope and put it into the abdomen near the belly button, and we'll take a look inside and look at the pelvic organs, the ovaries, the tubes, and that way we can see if there's any damage from infection or adhesions or endometriosis or scar tissue. And at that point, if we don't find anything, we then start to think about doing maybe intravitreal fertilization.
And that, of course, is a little more of a complex undertaking, and we're going to be talking about that a little bit later in the show with our IVF specialist. Dr. Zaidan, it sounds like you almost have to be a sleuth when a patient presents at the office with these kinds of issues, because you're taking into consideration so many different things, not to mention the person's age and their ultimate goal in life. How many kids do you want? What's your career like? How is this going to fit into working with your career? Do you want your children all to be born in your late 30s or maybe even into your 40s? There's a lot to consider here.
Well, I think that is, you know, where the art and the, you know, science of medicine kind of intersect. So, you know, the science of medicine is, you know, to identify all those things we just talked about. But the art of medicine is to determine how do we fit that in to the patient's, you know, scenario. For example, you know, I've had patients who maybe are working for big corporations and they're in the midst of a corporate takeover that's going to be 3 years, but yet they're 35 years old. How do we manage those patients? Do we talk to them about maybe freezing their eggs, so that they have an option down the road and then they can continue doing their work on the corporate front, which really can't be delayed? You know, so there are a lot of different factors that we deal with. And, I think it's, pretty intuitive of you to ask me that question, because what we're doing oftentimes is we're laying out a project plan and a timeline
right. For
someone's family. And how important is that, right? So we can't make that decision flippantly. We have to make that decision based on their desires and the science behind their desires, meaning that what is their problem? What is the statistical likelihood that they're going to get pregnant on their own naturally or going to require additional assistance? And then what is their timeline, and how do we match that whole process up to give us the best potential outcome? If we can do that, then I think we're, you know, becoming successful. And I think you're going to hear, you know, even in this in this interview that we're going to do with Dr. Hamoud, probably that we need to, you know, get people that are in the older age groups familiar with advanced reproductive techniques faster, so that they understand that these are options. Because I'm a big proponent, and I'll talk about this with him, in that, you know, people want to have multiple babies. And I think many times people forget that when they're thinking about having their first. They think about the time when they're going to get pregnant as when they're going to get pregnant for the first time. But they will be at least 2 years older, most likely, when they're getting pregnant the second time. So when you're planning your family, one of the most important questions I ask is, how many children do you ultimately want to have? Because that affects when you're going to want to start.
Yes, absolutely. Is there a number one issue that impacts fertility for women when they come to your office that you see over and over again?
You know, in my practice, it seems to be endometriosis is a big one. But I believe that that's because we do so much endometriosis work. I think infertility doesn't discriminate. So in the, you know, in the 2020 mantra of anti-discrimination and anti-bullying, I think infertility is that thing. I mean, I've seen people come in that want to have a baby that are of all different social classes, cultures, and demographics. And they all face the same problem. And honestly, it really is an ultimate equalizer in fertility. In that, you know, if you experience that, I mean, there's just no greater difficulty or hurdle that you can overcome. Because you have to think it's not only outside your control, but in many cases, you have a timeline that you're working against. And then there's a monetary cost to intervention. So all of those things are so difficult on a patient, and that's what creates so much fear. And, you know, I think, you know, in just in what we're dealing with today with the fear of COVID, I mean, the biggest thing to overcome in life is fear. Once you overcome the fear of hitting a baseball, it's a lot easier to hit it. Once you overcome the fear of the first time riding a bike or driving a car, you end up doing it routinely. And the problem with infertility is it only happens in your life once, and it's time dependent on how you act. And so it's very important that, you know, as physicians, we help people overcome that fear. And I think if we do that better, we'll get people pregnant easier and faster, and we can help plan their families a little bit better with them.
And on that note, we're going to be talking to Dr. Ahmad Hamoud, the medical director of IVF Michigan, coming up next here on the Healthy Woman Show. You're listening to the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. And as we said, we want to talk a little bit about bringing life into the world in the midst of this pandemic. Life does go on. And for a lot of couples, there is a lot of difficulty in having a child. And we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the hurdles they can cross and how they can do it with Dr. Zaidan, of course, always alongside. We want to welcome Dr. Ahmad Hamoud to the Healthy Woman Show. Dr. Hamoud is the medical director of IVF Michigan. Welcome, Dr. Hamoud.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Dr. Hamoud, we couldn't ask for more, in a time of crisis, for you to take out time of your day to talk to us more about what I consider a very important topic, because it, you know, we're so surrounded now with fear. Everyone is scared about the virus, and they're scared about, you know, what's going to happen to them and their family, and all the different uncertainty that's going on in the world right now. But the truth of the matter is that I encompass, you know, patients all the time with fear. We've already talked a little bit on the show about just our basic infertility workups. But when we get through a basic infertility workup and the patient still is not pregnant, they go through a lot of fear. And that's when we, you know, tend to reach out to an infertility provider such as yourself. So, you know, I mean, tell us a little bit about what you do to allay a patient's fear, and tell us, and then, you know, as we go on, a little bit about the outcomes that you get, because I think people need to hear something positive about what's going on today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Zaidan. So I'm going to start by hoping and praying for all our listeners to be safe and healthy there, themselves and their families. So what we do in our clinic, Dr. Zaidan, is obviously take the infertility workup to the more specialized levels. And nowadays, the technology of testing for fertility is very advanced, and more so treating infertility is very successful. We do notice that a lot of patients that come to our clinics, when they present initially, they have concerns. One of them is, after years of trying to have a baby, there is this idea that settled in their mind that they will never be able to be successful. And that's 99% of the time is incorrect, because many times we're able to guide the patients through testing and evaluation to very, very successful treatments.
I know that I've sent you patients where, you know, they couldn't get pregnant, and we've even done their what we call our BIE in the office, or a basic infertility evaluation. And then, you know, they come back to me smiling with a positive pregnancy. So, I mean, the things that you're doing, you know, really change, you know, their outcome per se, but they also go to you with this enormous amount of fear and thought that they'll never achieve a pregnancy. And sometimes they tell me, I don't know if I even want to take that leap. And I always encourage them to do so. So do you have to, like, you know, change their mindset? I mean, is it almost like a psychological thing that you have to do first to get them to accept this? Or how do you go about that?
100%, Dr. Zaidan, because a lot of the patients come with those preconceived notions. So we walk them slowly through what's available to them in terms of testing, and we offer them, you know, a lot of advanced treatments, because the technology, as you may know, of in vitro fertilization have advanced so much over the last 10 years that the success rate, the safety of this procedure as well as the affordability of the process came a long way.
How do you, when somebody's confronted with in vitro fertilization, I think there's three main things that they're concerned about. The first one is, will it work? The second one is cost. And the third one is, you know, will my baby be normal if I do it this way? How do you reach those three topics with them? I mean, you know, obviously they're important, right?
Dr. Zaidan, these are exactly the questions that most of the patients come with. So in terms of, like, is it successful? The answer is, in the overwhelming majority of the cases, it is successful, especially if the patients do not delay the process. The only problem we face is that when the patients get older, especially in the mid to late 40s, there's some biological changes that happen in their body that sometimes are hard to surmount with the technology unless they use donor egg. So coming early to the process and not delaying their consultation is going to be very important in terms of success. Second, in terms of affordability, the IVF obviously is out of pocket for many patients, and this is a concern for them in terms of how to pay. Most clinics, including our clinic, have amazing payment programs for patients, as well as deep discounts for patients with low income. So from that perspective, I'm very proud of our clinic that we are very, very progressive in helping patients who don't have necessarily all the financial means to proceed with IVF. In terms of safety, IVF has been around for more than 30 years. There's last year alone more than 70,000 babies born out of IVF, and overwhelming majority of those kids are safe and healthy with no higher risk of birth defect compared to any baby born in natural ways.
Well, I can't thank you enough for kind of outlining that, because I'll even use that. I mean, you know, I didn't realize as much that you have so many financing options, because not to cover cost first, but that seems to be such a barrier. Everybody thinks that there's just no options for them, and the fact that you have deep discounts really helps getting people there. But the other thing that I hear as an OBGYN, which I always stress, which I think as I go back into practice now and talk to somebody, maybe even, tomorrow, I'm going to talk to them about, you know, you really need to go early. I think I always do stress that. But, you know, if somebody's in their 30s and they're having some trouble and we identify it and they want multiple kids in their family, you have to start this process early. And I think that's something that people don't always think about. They think about, you know, being, well, I'm 38, so as long as I'm pregnant before I'm 40. But the problem is that if they want a second or a third child, right, that becomes an interrupted barrier for them. So I'll definitely, you know, make sure that I do that clinically in my practice. But I think anybody listening should understand that, you know, once you've gone through this workup, you need to get into an in vitro type fertilization office that can help you when you're younger, if you know you already have a problem or you've already been identified. And so the other issue that I see so much is all these questions about safety, which I think you've just discussed. Is there any risk of preterm labor or all the other things that all the patients talk about? I'd like to know just to keep myself up to date.
So just to touch base quickly on the age, as you may know, Dr. Zaidan, now there's a recommendation for all women who are less than 35 not to wait more than a year. So if they try it for 1 year, they should seek help with fertility. If they are older than 35 but less than 40, they only wait 6 months at home. And if they're 40 years old, they should immediately seek fertility treatment. Even if they tried for 1 or 2 months, they immediately should test their self and their partner and make sure there's no problem there. So that's for the age. In terms of risk of preterm delivery and preterm labor, IVF do have a slightly increased risk of preterm delivery, but the increase is mainly due to multiple pregnancy, and that's something our IVF community have came a long way in solving. So IVF started by, not knowing which embryo to transfer, and that resulted in transferring 2 or 3 embryos that resulted in a higher rate of triplets that caused preterm delivery or sometimes twins. But the current technology allows extremely high success with one embryo at a time, and nationally the chance of preterm delivery as well as multiple pregnancy with IVF have decreased significantly over the last 5 years.
That is such great news to hear. And then also, as you counsel people, do you counsel them right off the bat on whether or not they would be a better candidate based on stimulation for their own egg or for donor egg? I mean, I know you offer all these options. At what point do you identify that quickly?
Now there is great tools, including a simple blood test called anti-Müllerian hormone, which tests the egg reserve. This will give us an idea of how many eggs the ovaries still have. As you may know, Dr. Zaidan, women are born with a set number of eggs, and unfortunately, that number of eggs decline very quickly after age 30, and sometimes by early 40s, many women don't have enough eggs in their ovaries. So the combination of age and egg reserve will definitely help us guide the patients immediately to whether they need to proceed with IVF immediately or whether they're unfortunately past the point where they can use their eggs and we need to use donor egg. Another note on that, we use that tool also to counsel the patients who desire to freeze their eggs, because that's unfortunately a great service that is completely underutilized in Michigan. We have a lot of young women, maybe in careers that require more time and require them to delay childbirth. Those patients would be great candidates if they're between the ages of 32 to 38 and they're not planning on having children in the next 1 or 2 years or 5 years. Those patients can present to one of our clinics. We can stimulate their ovaries, harvest the eggs, and freeze them in a young, healthy stage. And this way, if they need to use them in the future, they don't have to use donor egg.
I just want to make sure that to clarify for our younger people that are listening, and there's financing options for that as well, right?
Correct.
So that's like an insurance policy, and it's almost like a younger person providing themselves an insurance policy in the future. And I think that that's important for people to know, because so many times I hear from people and they don't understand that is, you know, an option for them, because maybe when they're younger, they don't have the finances to do anything that seems so technical.
Dr. Ahmad Hamoud, thank you so much for joining us today. You've answered such a wide variety of questions this morning concerning IVF, and we appreciate your time. Again, Dr. Hamoud can be reached at IVF Michigan. He's the medical director there. Healthy Woman Show continues here on WJR. Dr. Zaidan, Dr. Hamoud was just a wealth of information for anyone who's meeting the challenge of infertility. But I want to end the show to talk a little bit about one of the things that has become a specialty for you, aside from very excellent medical care for your patients, and that's specialty virtual care. And what an important topic to discuss, how timely it is to discuss that today with the problems that we're facing in the world.
Well, we discussed it earlier, in the first segment of the show, right? We talked about how mm-hmm. things have changed, and talk about transforming in the time of need. I mean, you know, we had to go from everybody sitting in our office and busy waiting rooms and so on and so forth and not worrying at all about being, next to one another. And in fact, in many cases, we encourage people to have social interaction. To going within 2 weeks, we've basically gone from nobody should be within 6 feet of one another, and then a complete social distancing, meaning that our waiting rooms are now empty. Patients that are being seen in our office go directly into a room, and a lot of our visits are being done with this virtual care platform. So, I mean, I can't tell you, it's changed just about everything that we're doing. I don't believe healthcare will ever be the same after this.
I think there's going to be a lot of things that aren't going to be the same after, a lot of industries that aren't going to be the same, but most importantly, our healthcare, because it's coming, it's really on the front line of what we're facing today. Let's talk a little bit about the actual virtual care. What can somebody expect when they get a virtual care visit? And you know what? I think as a consumer and a patient, my first thing is, well, is it as good as seeing the doctor in person?
I have to tell you, if you kind of, brainstorm, when you see a doctor in person, the one thing that you do get, right, is you get that human feeling of the doctor, and you get a good feeling of what that doctor is all about just by making that initial judgment by seeing them. With virtual care, you're still seeing them. You're just seeing them online. And today, everyone is seeing a lot of things online because we have so much, you know, on YouTube and so much on social media and so many videos that are shared. And it's so easy to take a video of even your loved one and share it between your family. So people are used to video. And the truth of the matter is you can do a lot on virtual care and then obtain testing or simple examinations afterward, right? So it doesn't all have to be real time. Sometimes, you know, we have to change the way we kind of work a patient up so that maybe we only see them once in the office, but we've done two or three visits and interpreted laboratory tests and radiologic images and ultrasounds and all of those things. And we can talk to them about that stuff over the phone. And then think about things like anxiety counseling. I mean, we can definitely do that over a virtual care visit where we're looking at each other face-to-face over a computer screen or on your mobile device or telephone. And, you know, test results, even our routine OB visits, we can assess whether baby's been moving. A lot of what we need to talk about with patients is how is the baby doing? How are you doing with your diet? So on and so forth. Menopausal evaluations, you know, weight management consultations where we can, you know, utilize their home scales. When we do our initial visits, we talk so much about in our company about pelvic pain and endometriosis. So many times we can do those initial visits and get all that history and understand what's going on with the patient virtually, and then maybe examine them once, provide them a blood slip where they could get close to their home, a laboratory analysis at one of the commercial labs that might be 5 minutes from their house, and then get an ultrasound in our office and do the exam on the same time and ultimately save them a big trek into our office and time and the travel time and everything else by just doing a scheduled visit. And then there's, you know, what we talked about today, infertility consultation. A lot of what we do initially is really done by history. So we can do that over a virtual platform. And then a myriad of other things, such as your medication refills and those types of things. And it's up to us as leaders, I mean, you know, women's healthcare as leaders, to determine how this virtual care system is going to be utilized. And I am so excited about it because I really believe that when it's all said and done, it's going to change the process in which we see patients. And that's what I think is most important. And that if you're working downtown, you could get your blood work downtown after you did your virtual visit and come home and never worry about it again until you did your secondary virtual visit to go over your blood work. I mean, how great would that be if you lived in the suburbs and you couldn't get back by 5 o'clock when your doctor's office was open?
Exactly. And it would alleviate so much anxiety and fear, which, of course, the world is consumed with right now. Dr. Jonathan Zaden of Women's Excellence, first of all, our thanks deeply to you and your staff and all the doctors and nurses who are on the front line of this pandemic. We thank you. And there will be a ticker tape parade, I think, after this is over with for all of you. We want to thank you for joining us again today here on The Healthy Woman Show on WJR.
The Healthy Woman Show has been presented by Women's Excellence.